Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Hey everyone, welcome to a solo episode today. I hope you're enjoying the Wholehearted series and enjoying some of the guests I've been getting on. I really wanted to be intentional about the kind of guests I got on to really complement the subject of living wholehearted. And I'm really passionate about wholeness and really learning how to steward and cultivate and nurture our body, our soul, and our spirit. And so today I thought I'd kind of go off from talking about the guideposts, which I've been kind of doing a lot of solo episodes talking about the guideposts of living wholehearted. And I really thought I have been teaching on this subject for 8 years. And I wanted to talk about how I regulate my emotions and my different practices that work for me, and how I reframe my experiences, and really just talk through how to work through your triggers. I think that there's so much information on social media that gives us little glimpses into little things that we can do to feel a bit more regulated. Some of them are really, really good. But sometimes it's just really helpful to hear, what do you do, Ella, to make you feel regulated? So today I'm going to go into talking about what it actually looks like when you're triggered, how to know if you're triggered. I know when I first started doing this work, I realized, I'm triggered all the time. And it felt a little defeating. It felt a little frustrating. And so I'm going to explain different things to give you language to maybe what's happening inside your internal world. And then I'm going to really talk through how to just regulate that. And when I think of regulation, I think of almost like the food industry and how there's regulations and standards so that we're not eating bad food, which is a whole other other topic. But I think of the word regulation, and it's a way of kind of bringing order to what's happening internally. And I have been teaching on this subject for a long time, and have really wrestled through it and rumbled with the topic. And I think I have areas of concern, especially with this fast-paced TikTok therapist. We see something on social media, it validates our experience to a certain extent, and then we go labeling and diagnosing ourselves. And I think it's really important for you guys to know, I'm not a therapist. I have been a pastor for many years and a coach and all of those things, but I'm not a therapist, so definitely go get your own therapy. But my concern is that sometimes, like, our hearts need language to wrap around our experiences. And so sometimes we'll see something on social media that gives us language, and then it's kind of like the hill we'll die on. We'll be like, that person was gaslighting me. And then when I really dig into it, I'm like, I don't think they were gaslighting you. I actually just think you just felt misunderstood and you guys were misunderstanding each other. And so I think that it's really important to really go on a journey of regulating your emotions so that we're not labeling and demonizing the people around us, because there's also projection as well, like where we project our experience and our lens onto what's happening. And this is a way, when you learn how to emotionally regulate, you're basically learning how to cleanse the palate. You're actually finding a purer story, And you're giving language to places in your life that maybe haven't felt heard, or you haven't been able to access love and compassion into those places. And so anytime we're triggered, it's really an invitation to get more love into that place, because love casts out fear, and a lot of our triggers are our threat responses, our fears coming up. And I think that, like, yeah, so the thing that casts out fear is love. And so whenever we feel triggered, I wouldn't see it as a bad thing. It's just really good information. So I think that's the first thing when you're looking at your triggers, is like, rather than demonizing them, actually getting curious about them and going, oh, that's a space that feels scary for me, or feels, yeah, like it's just giving you information. And sometimes when I'm meeting with clients, I'm listening to them and what they're saying, but I'm also tuning in on a deeper level, on a spiritual level, trying to tap into what are the patterns and cycles that this person has coming up right now. What's kind of a theme of the triggers? Like, especially like when someone is doing their next brave thing and they're putting themselves out there, I'll notice like, oh, there's this old narrative that they've had for years and years really coming up in the way that people are responding to them as they take this risk or whatever. And it's often rooted from something in the past that's just kind of woken up. And I've heard it said, like, whenever we risk, all of our trauma comes up, or all of our triggers come up, or all of our trust issues come up. And so I think it's really important to have a bit of a template or a formula or a structure to help us guide us through these triggers, so that we feel a little more supported in our emotional experience. And I put out a podcast in last season, it was the last episode, where I talk about understanding your emotions. And it was kind of an introduction to it. So you might want to go back and listen to that episode, because it complements this episode. And I think we resist ambiguity. And so my heart for you as you listen today is that we can lose some of the ambiguous, like, and the confusion and the overwhelm around learning how to process your emotions. So I'm going to also attach some, I've actually launched my email list, and I'm going to, if you sign up for my email list, you'll get some of my journal prompts that I use a lot. And I'm going to be real, like, now in this season of my life, I actually don't use them that much, but there were particular seasons where I was just triggered all the time. And I really just wanted to make sense of myself, like why I show up the way I show up. And when you learn how to regulate your emotions, you actually get in the driver's seat of your life. There's such a payoff to learning how to do this. You become so much more empowered. I hear a lot of Christians sort of say, oh, the enemy's out to get me. And I'm like, let's not give the enemy so much credit. Like, it sounds like you think the enemy is more powerful than God is powerful. And so when you learn to regulate your emotions, it's actually you're learning to go, oh, that's a soul thing. Like, I've actually just got this trigger coming up, and I'm learning how to get into a centered place, into a regulated space. And I'm learning how to be at peace. And I think that peace is our greatest weapon against the enemy. And so when you can kind of clear up and distinguish, like, am I just triggered in this moment? You can start to kind of know just what to do. Know what to do with what's happening in your internal world. Because some of our triggers are communicating to us, hey, you need to put in a boundary here, or you need to ask for what you need. You need to show up in this situation. And so I think there's something powerful about uncovering options, because I think when we feel triggered, we're in such a tunnel, we don't actually see options. And so that's another payoff of learning how to regulate. And so let's start with like going through like how to know if you're triggered. And this is actually from a website just called Trinity Map. Maybe I'll link it below, but it's just a PDF that kind of goes through what cognitive distortions are, so, or unhelpful thinking patterns. And they can also be very self-destructive. And so I also, before I share this, I find that like learning how to regulate your emotions really shows me where I get to target and renew my mind. So some people, like, you can say affirmations until you're blue in the face, and you can write declarations on your mirror of like, I am beautiful, I am powerful, but they actually they probably won't really take root until you can actually look for what is the, like, you can drill down and get to the root of like, what is the lie that I'm believing? And here's how I can like change, renew my mind in the truth. And so you're being laser focused, you're actually hitting the nail on the head, and you know what truth that you're supposed to reinforce. And so some signs that you might be triggered. So the first one is overgeneralizing. So based on one isolated incident, people with this thinking pattern assume all other events will follow a similar pattern in the future. Basically, one bad thing makes you believe that everything is and will be bad. For example, you struggle with one particular subject at school, so you think, I'm stupid and I'm not good at anything. I'll always fail. Another one is all or nothing thinking, seeing things as black and white. There's no in between. For example, my partner broke up with me. No one will ever love me again. If I can't be perfect, there's no point in trying at all. And so all or nothing thinking, black and white. Some people think that black and white thinking is not when you're triggered because they're so attached to being right. But it's actually really a sign of rigid, triggered thinking. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's some things that we have convictions about, but often more or less, like when I really dig into black and white thinking in someone, it's usually comes from a pain point in their past where they had to get black and white and they had to be rigid because they'd been taken advantage of, or there'd been something of pain in that area. And then another sign of being triggered is must and should statements. People often live by fixed rules for themselves about what they should do or how they should feel, and judge themselves harshly if they don't meet them. So, for example, I should always look at as perfect as possible. I must never make mistakes or be seen as weak. And I always think about when I was a kid, I would say, we never get to do this, or you always say we can't do this. And it's actually like a part of our heart, because we're feeling disappointed about something, we love to go to the extreme labeling of like always and never, and you never picked us up from school. We always had to catch the bus. And it's like, actually, there's quite a bit more nuance to that story. We tend to go into that extreme. And then there's emotional reasoning. So treating emotions as if they're facts without thinking about the possibility that the feelings might be just feelings. For example, I feel alone. That means nobody cares about me. I feel anxious. That means I'm in danger. I think this is a big one as we learn to really understand our emotions. Then the next one is labeling. So we know we're triggered if we're labeling. People who are low or anxious often label themselves in negative ways. These labels make you feel worse about yourself, even when they may not be based on facts. For example, I'm ugly, I'm weird, crazy, I'm a failure, I'm stupid, I'm too much. And I think it also goes the other way of labeling other people. So we demonize other people by labeling them of their, I don't know, I'm trying to think, they're a misogynist, they're, they're crazy, they're like, you know, so we, you know, often when we're triggered, we'll have to have a good guy or a bad guy. And so it feels really good to say that that person's a narcissist when, like, there's actually a bit more nuance to maybe that human than they're just a narcissist. And don't get me wrong, if you have been a part of narcissistic abuse, it makes sense that that would be a starting place for you. So I never want to minimize, even as I talk through these triggers, like I never want someone to be like, oh, Ella just said that I'm triggered, so I'm wrong and I'm bad because she just labeled everything that I feel all the time. And so we're trying to move away from seeing like, oh, if I'm triggered, then I'm wrong. And if I'm not triggered, then I'm right. I think that's really important because sometimes like I'll get into like a bit more of that later. But I will say that sometimes our hearts have been so hurt that hearing we're triggered can feel like it's another layer of invalidating our pain. And so I will definitely unpack a little bit more about that kind of side of things. But moving on to mental filter, that's another cognitive distortion or sign that you're triggered. It's ignoring the positive aspects of life or situations, or instead focusing on the negative. So for example, your teacher gives you good feedback, but you're certain that they don't really mean it. You also might focus on and worry about the one thing they said that you could have improved. And it's so interesting how so we're so programmed to look for the negative. But what emotional regulation does is allows you to kind of hold two things. There's a power of duality. You're able to kind of hear like some negative feedback, but also you're able to hear the places that you excel, and you can hold those two things rather than your bias constantly going to the negative. Another cognitive distortion or sign that you're triggered is personalization. This I see a lot in humans. So we are very self-focused naturally, but the reality is people aren't thinking about us as much as we think they're thinking about themselves. They are thinking about themselves. So people who think this way believe that everything is to do with them, and it's usually negative. They blame themselves for no logical reason. For example, my friend is in a bad mood today. I must have upset them. In reality, you haven't done anything wrong. They're upset about something else. It's my fault. My parents always argue. So we do that a little bit as kids. We see something negative, and especially from 0 to 12, that's when we really personalize things about it. Like we take it to mean something about us. And then another one, this is huge, especially if you've walked through trauma. We have an addiction to assumptions. And the science shows that, and what the sign is that you're triggered is jumping to conclusions. So we are really wired to make up assumptions about situations, because our brain hates a lack of information. And so I have heard it said that our brain chemically rewards us for the story that we make up about a situation, even when it's not even true. So this is where it gets really gnarly and really not okay in the Christian world, especially if you believe in the Holy Spirit and having discernment. And if you do not emotionally regulate, You will make up assumptions and then call it God, and then you've created a God trump card. And this is like the biggest thing that I, which is why I'm so passionate about emotional maturity going hand in hand with spiritual maturity, because the assumptions that we make up is, and it's funny because we're called a people of faith, yet we hate uncertainty and we love to future predict all the time. But sometimes we're actually making up assumptions because our brain just can't handle the uncertainty. So when you start to emotionally regulate, you start to fact check, which is a huge part of, learning how to process your emotions is like seeing the emotion come up and looking at the meaning that you've associated with the emotion, and then looking for evidence of actual truth and facts. So jumping to conclusions is really jumping to a negative conclusion about something without all the facts. Often the worst case scenario when you don't actually know if it's true. For example, mind reading. Everyone is thinking about how awkward and weird I look. Fortune telling. Even if I try, I will just fail anyway. There's no point in doing that. It won't help. And I think that like these cognitive distortions that I'm talking about is very focused on you, but I see it also when we have the breakdown in relationships around us is because we are constantly fortune telling. We're trying to make up a story about what we're quote unquote discerning, but actually it's because we are dysregulated. And so it's not that it doesn't give us good information, but we're not going to find overall healthy wisdom from making up these conspiracy theories. And so that's why I'm really passionate about emotional regulation, because it will start to, you will start to be able to actually communicate with people around you a lot better. You will actually be able to find a sense of peace in the not knowing in a situation. And you'll be able to also renew your mind in a new truth and show up differently in a situation. I think when you first approach emotional regulation or going through these journal prompts that I've attached, you're going to feel a little overwhelmed. And it might feel like, because you'll see the list of questions I have there, you might not even be able to answer it. But the point is to kind of keep showing up and learning to make sense of your lens, basically. Something that I learned when teaching on triggers was really understanding your family map, like the way that you learned connection from your family growing up. And also like, what is it, what are the patterns and triggers and cycles that you find yourself stuck in? For me, I had a lot of lack mindset. And so I would find myself getting triggered around lack a lot, or people pleasing. I would go into a fawn response and then I would be so emotionally exhausted because it wasn't from a place of authenticity. I wasn't living in that centered place. And so the more you emotionally regulate, the more you learn how to articulate your needs, the more that you know how to get your needs met in a healthy way, and the more whole you will feel. And so I'm going to jump to like really talking through some of the questions that I get people to kind of process through when they learn how to journal and process their thoughts. But I will share some of the things that I do before I do this. So as you guys know, I, at the start of the year, did a course called Reclaiming You by Abby Stumbel and Rachel Hughes. I do plan to have Rachel on the podcast soon. But it was a really concentrated course on healing the nervous system and really getting connected to your body. So one thing that I have tried to shift and do throughout the day is moments where I actually tune into my body. And so really that's kind of like doing a bit of a body scan and like noticing if I am holding any tension. So for me, sometimes I'm like, even right now, as I record this podcast, I can feel a little bit of tightness in my chest. And so sometimes I'll just like right now, I'll just put my hands on my chest and just start to tune into that. And I'm just not criticizing the fact that I feel that. I'm just more becoming, letting myself internally slow down, and even feeling the comfort of my hand on my chest is starting to make me feel a little bit more centered. And so the other thing that I do is, like, if I'm really, really triggered, sometimes it goes up through the back of my neck and in my shoulders. And so I'll start just by massaging that, or like bringing comfort to that. One thing that I heard, and I would teach my students this a lot, like if you have something really painful happen, like you feel really triggered by something, I would just say pain, 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 pain. Because it's helping me acknowledge that something painful has happened. And what it does is, as I start to tune into my body and tune into what's happening, I'm actually turning towards myself, like giving myself compassion and giving myself attention. And so I do that, and like it's almost like that comfort starts to kind of like send the blood flow from my amygdala. So when we're triggered, like all those things that I've said, often, so our blood, most of the blood rushes to the amygdala. And so then I'm not in my rational prefrontal cortex thinking. So as I start to do these little practices, it helps me get a little bit more online. So it helps me to feel, yeah, embodied and connected to myself and connected to my body. And then the blood flow starts to flow to my prefrontal cortex, and I start to see options. I think this is really important, even in our relationships, is something might happen to someone we love, and immediately our 4F responses will happen, where we want to get in and fix or give advice. And sometimes, like, we're like that with ourselves, where we're like, okay, I made a mistake, so I need to like do X, Y, and Z to fix this situation so I don't feel this pain again. But really, like, that's not coming from a place of wisdom, it's coming from reaction. And so when I can tune into my body, like it starts to actually put a little bit of separation between me and the emotion. So as I tune into my body and tune into what's happening, I even start to notice my breath. Is it shallow? Do I feel restricted? And there is a regulating breath work that I actually just do all the time because my body likes it. And it's literally 6 minutes long. And I just go through this breathing. It has some VU breathing in it as well. And because our body learns that it's safe through repetition. So when you do the same kind of regulating thing over and over again, it's a way of coming back into your body and feeling settled and at peace. And the reason I don't like to necessarily say you have to start with nervous system work or breath work before you go into journaling, or before you go into spending time with God. Sometimes like I don't try and like put in an order, because I'm really just learning to tune in to what I need in the moment or what I have access to in the moment. So yeah, I will definitely do some breath work, and I don't do it every day. Like, I mean, there was a time where I was doing it multiple times a day and really noticing, like, learning how to be present and in the moment. But now I just kind of, do it occasionally. And I don't know about you guys, like sometimes I see these Instagram posts where they have their daily routine dialed. And sometimes I can be like that, but then oftentimes it's just not. It depends on like how busy my life is as well. And so right now I'm in a bit more of a flexible season. So sometimes I'm like, oh, we're doing breath work before I go to bed. That's great. And so what breath work does, I think I mentioned it in the last episode about emotions, is basically if you are breathing out for 8 seconds, that actually signals to your body that you're safe and you're not being chased by a lion. And so that's been really helpful for me. Even like if I notice I've had a long day out or I have back-to-back clients, I will try and do some breath work before I go make dinner, because it even shifts like the choices I make with food and like it just shifts the choices that I make because I'm not looking to like necessarily numb when I have just like the powerful 6-minute breath work that kind of shifts like what choices I make. And guys, I'm not perfect at this. It's something that I'm trying to develop where I have different kind of, like if I'm out all day or if I've had back-to-back clients, I'm trying to have good positive shifts that help me shift my state. So the biggest thing I learned from the course is that story follows state. And so I really do notice like if I have been going back to back, I haven't had a moment to kind of like close out that kind of more fight energy or that mobilized energy to a more regulated state. And so that's kind of like definitely connecting to my body, connecting to breath work helps kind of get some separation between you and what's triggering you. Because especially if you have a lot of triggers going on, you're going to find that you get quite flooded with emotions and it can feel so overwhelming. And so your goal is with these little breath work, little somatic exercises is to feel 1-5% better. You're not trying to feel all the way better. I think a lot of people start with, I think I even did this, like someone would talk about breath work and I just didn't connect that it was going to be helpful because I think I did it once and didn't really notice a difference until I started to actually have a bit of a ritual, bit of a practice around it. And then the other thing that helps to kind of like make the emotion smaller is the power of narration. So I first learned this from Justin Abbey Stumble, and it goes really hand in hand with self-compassion, your self-talk. So if I can start to notice, tune towards like my body and even like send some love to that place of tension that I have in my body, I will start to like notice rather than thinking about what's triggering me and trying to solve that, I'll just be like, start to just notice like the sensations. So I'll just say, I have some tightness in my chest. My voice feels restricted. I feel like I need to take a deep breath. And if, as I start to narrate what's happening or even noticing, am I even comfortable on the couch? Am I comfortable in this moment? And I start having that kind of internal narration happening, it starts gets me off trying to solve the thing that's triggering me or who's frustrating me and gets me tuned into what's actually happening with me. I think a lot of the time we have something painful happen and we go straight to whose fault it is or why, you know, to whoever the threat is in front of us versus actually learning how to actually attune to ourselves. And connection is such a healing force. Like when we feel connected, that is where we feel healed and whole. And so basically what narration does is really it gets us thinking again. So it shifts the blood flow from your amygdala to your prefrontal cortex. So it helps get you into logic as you kind of start to take inventory of what's happening inside you. I think a lot of people would start with narration with blame, like this person is crazy. They said this and that's why I'm so upset. And that is kind of like surface level, but we really want to go deeper into, I feel really scared right now. What is it that I feel? I feel like I can't predict what's going to happen from this person, which makes me feel anxious. And it reminds me of this. And so what narration also does is create some space. And so when we narrate calmly and consciously, it creates a small but essential space between ourselves and the intense emotions that we're experiencing. It's almost like we become an observer. We get in the bird's eye view of us. And I love, that's why I do the exercise of pain, 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 because it gets me into like more an observer of like something painful has happened to Ella. And I become more of an investigator or curious about what's happening. Narration also helps us get into the present moment. I know often when we're triggered, we go into future tripping or ruminating on the past, and we tend to get thrown completely out of our present moment. So narrating, like let's say you had an argument with someone that you love, and then you're replaying the argument over and over again, and it's like, because we have so many thoughts, I think something between 60,000 and 70,000 thoughts in a day, it's like that person is saying that mean thing to you over and over and over in your day. And so even just like you narrating by going, oh, I know I want to keep jumping to ruminate on that issue. I know I'm, and I would even start becoming aware of like what threat response you're in. So I know I'm in flight, I'm OCD looping, I feel like I'm bouncing around everywhere. Let's try and find center. And so, so I think when we're triggered, we're often having emotional and physical flashbacks. So it also helps us get into the present moment that, you know, because a lot of our times when we have big feelings, like if it's hysterical, it's historical. So often we're having a flashback. And it may not be like, oh, I'm actively having a memory right now, but your five senses are having a flashback, even though you're not having like an actual memory happen. And so really like it helps you kind of come back into the present moment, because I think movies do this really well where they show a memory or a flashback on the screen. But we're actually, anytime we feel, we remember. So we're constantly bringing our story with us. But part of emotional regulation is changing the narrative, actually teaching our inner child that we're not stuck in a powerless situation. And so it can also be in that segues into a moment for reparenting. And it's a moment where you can give love to that little kid who maybe felt out of control or didn't feel safe or felt abandoned or neglected. And it's a space where you can really love that little kid and give that little kid some attention, and you can speak over yourself in that moment. And that's also a really powerful tool, is really learning reparenting language. And so like any sort of attunement, anytime we acknowledge that something is real, like reality confirming moments. So attunement is a great way of reality confirming. That makes us feel like, yeah, that's valid. Like I'm feeling a lot of big emotions right now, and that matters. You're starting to tune into that. I think a lot of the times we miss so many moments for validation and attunement because we don't know how to give it to ourselves. And I really noticed this actually coming back to Australia. Something Americans say a lot is like, if you tell them something that's hard or painful or whatever, they'll say, oh, I'm so sorry. And I think growing up in Australia, I mean, it might be a common thing in Australia, but I think I used to think like, why would you say you're sorry? You didn't do that to me. And I think growing up, I didn't really know how to be validated for my experience as well. So even moments where someone would be like, oh, that really sucks, I'm sorry you had that happen, or that's really painful, I would even push away someone else's validation or their empathy because I just never knew how to connect to myself and tune into like, oh, that was hard. That was painful. And so learning how to narrate and your self-talk and self-compassion actually helps you turn towards and like go, yeah, that matters. And I think that this is a big thing because most of us live through the world not feeling like our experience matters. We feel really misunderstood. And so learning how to narrate really helps to start becoming a healing balm to your soul where you start to really understand yourself. I always say that misunderstood people will misunderstand people. And because the biggest thing that emotional regulation does is actually gives you the gift of understanding. It helps you go, oh, I make sense. It makes sense that I respond this way. And I think a big thing with really seeing triggers is sometimes we have a level 10 response to a level 2 problem. And then we can feel crazy. Like, why am I having a level 10 response to a level 2 problem? And so what emotional regulation will help you kind of map out why am I having a big response and actually giving compassion towards yourself for that and acknowledge that makes sense that you have big emotions when this core wound is hit on. And I think that we're constantly looking for something outside of us to affirm that in us, but often it usually starts with us. It starts in our own practices and learning how to tune into ourselves. And then it's crazy. We start to attract it on the outside. And I'm the biggest believer that is that we teach people how to treat us. And so when we learn how to actually value ourselves and connect to ourselves and love ourselves, we can't help but attract those kind of dynamics into our life. So I think that those are some keys to think about when you're emotionally regulating. So you've got breath work, you've got body awareness. I go to Pilates a lot. It actually helps me really regulate and connect to my body. Like someone will say, what do you think about this? Or, you know, when I've had like a full day of clients or something, and I'll be like, I don't even know what I think right now. And then I'll go do Pilates and it's like creative thoughts come in. I think as a creative, it's really helpful to learn how to regulate our emotions because it gets you into your prefrontal cortex, which gets you into the flow state as a creative. And the flow state is like the best state to be in. And so a lot of people are using a lot of medication to find a different space, a different headspace to feel whatever it is that they're feeling. But the best creativity comes from reality, not fantasy. And that's kind of the same in anything in our life is we make up stories, we make up fantasies about, you know, romantic partners or career things happening. And we're looking for that fantasy for some sort of relief. But the reality is the truth sets us free. And so when we learn to regulate our emotions, and this is often why we don't want to do it, is because we have to face our reality. And facing our reality can be quite brutal initially until you really learn to be met with compassion. And then it's like when we face our reality, we can actually learn how to be powerful and make powerful choices in our reality. And then actually be able to partner with God and the divine for wisdom and knowing how to you know, show up powerfully in a situation and learning how to value yourself, having creative ideas. Like there's so much payoff to learning how to regulate. But I'll close with kind of going through some of the journal prompts, and there are quite a few, but I'm going to give you a few different options. And you can start by just kind of reading through it, becoming aware of it. I'm a really big fan of like really experimenting and figuring out what works for you. But basically this structure is kind of broken down to get you to the point where you're reframing your story. It kind of follows like the three-act structure of, you know, life was one way and then an inciting incident happens. There's the rumble of like, I want to go back to the old world. I want to go back to the comfort zone. And then Act 3 is like where we have our enlightenment, our redemption or different way of seeing things. Brené Brown breaks it down into the reckoning, the rumble, the revolution. So reckoning is recognizing a button's been pushed. You might notice that through your sensations in your body, or just that you're feeling really activated. There's a lot of energy happening in your body. And then you'll go into the rumble, which is you're rumbling with the made up stories that you make up when you have something happen. We're so addicted to meaning making. And so even if it's not true, we'll make up meaning. And so we have to let go of those self-protective stories and the ego stories that are trying to protect us. And then we go into the revolution, and we actually go into that place of revelation and like a place of wisdom, perspective. I think the healthiest perspectives come from that bird's eye view. The Bible even talks about his ways are higher, his thoughts are higher about our situations. And so we're really coming into that higher perspective and accessing more wisdom and depth and growth. And my biggest thing is like learning, like, if I really connect to my truest self, my most authentic self, how would she show up in this situation? What action would I take if I really believed that I was worthy, or really believed that I was loved, or really believed I was capable? And so basically the questions are starting off with awareness. What emotion is coming up, and having a feelings wheel is really good. It's good to find, really learn to find language around what is the emotion. What is the person triggering me, or event triggering inside me? And in this place, I'm usually like brain dumping or writing down like the scenario that happened. And then I'm asking myself, what is the emotion being triggered? What do I feel like I'm lacking in myself? Do I feel a lack of respect, acceptance, security? Do I feel unsafe? Do I feel like, what am I, like a quality in the dynamic, appreciation? I'm not feeling seen. What is this emotion telling me that I need? Which is so helpful to kind of go, oh, I'm actually needing to be heard, or I'm needing to feel a sense of security or appreciation or equality or respect. And then you go into your origin story and where in my life have I needed this, and who from? So is there any moments in your teenage years or childhood or your early 20s where it's kind of reminding you of a dynamic that took place? Because we'll often repeat the cycles until we become aware of it. And then sometimes you can go even deeper of like, do I have a specific memory where this came up that there was painful, a painful moment? And in that moment is where you can learn to reparent, of like going back to that young girl that was maybe bullied and saying, I'm so sorry that no one saw this, that you weren't protected, that you weren't fought for. And you really like tune into that matters, like you matter. And then you go into a place of empowerment, because you might notice like if the thing that's triggering you is a workplace dynamic where you're constantly overlooked and not heard, and it can make you feel so small. Like, I know those work dynamics, my goodness. And then you can ask yourself, why do I still shrink, settle, or stay small in this area of my life? How can I give myself what I need? And it's kind of like learning how to take back what was stolen from you. How can I actually embody this? If I really knew I was accepted, how would I show up in this space? And then you can also go into like, how does God see me? And then it's helpful to kind of look at like, what is the childhood loops and limiting belief that is currently being projected in the situation that's happening? So they might be like, if you look down to the root of it, is it I'm worthy or I'm inadequate or I'm a failure, I'm unlikable, I don't deserve love, I'm insecure. And then like those could be some of those things. And then it's also really good to go through the facts and compare the loop to your childhood. And again, we get these black and white statements from our child self. So from 0 to 12, we're really in black and white thinking and in absolutes. And so that's why we can make these pretty big core wounds around our lovability, our worthiness in those years. And so even just looking at like facts, like for me, a big need that I have is autonomy and a feeling of freedom. Like, and so anytime I feel controlled or manipulated, and because I had some of those dynamics growing up, anytime I feel any ounce or whiff of manipulation, I used to go into like quickly labeling the person in front of me. But now I have to fact check and go, they are not manipulative. They are not a bad person. They remind me of this. So I'm starting to get a little separation versus going into reactive behavior. And trust me, it takes like work to actually fully not be fully reactive, but I would actually go and give compassion to the younger Ella that didn't feel like she had a choice, that didn't feel like she had autonomy, and that she was at the mercy of a belief system or at the mercy of what adults were telling her to be true. And so I would say, like, we don't have to actually live under that anymore because you're an adult now. And so we kind of fact check of, like, you're not stuck there. You have choice. You have empower. Like, you can make a choice in this situation. You don't have to do that thing. And then I look at, like, facing what are the threats or fears and what are the worst case scenarios. So if in this situation that happened, what are my options? But I think before you get into like, what are my options? How can I put in a boundary or taking action? I think the biggest thing is tuning into the emotion, actually like letting that big emotion settle down. Because apparently like in the science of emotions, we usually have a peak where the emotion is really, really bad. And then it kind of like dips and like, you know, and so when we don't go through the whole emotion, like I even find it helpful to go, I'm in the peak of the emotion right now. So of course, everything feels extreme. And what most people do is when they're in the peak, they completely disassociate. They block out, they pretend it's not happening. And so as we emotionally grow, we want to learn to ride the wave. So we do that through narration. We do that through giving ourselves compassion. And then it really does take the sting out of the painful moment. But when we disassociate from the big painful moment and don't know how to bring attunement into that, that is when we're going to kind of shove it down and not actually process the emotion fully through. And that's when we make up crazy stories. So hence, if you only have to go on social media to see how dysregulated everyone is and see how much crazy stories are going on. And so I think it's really important to really let go of our ego narratives as we process through our triggers. And really the idea is to take the focus off the other people that are affecting us. And it's learning how to find safety within yourself. And so then you can make really, really empowered choices. So make sure you sign up to my email list. I have some journal prompts there, but thank you so much for listening today. And if you are really stuck with processing triggers, you can go through these questions and, you know, bring it to a therapist that you're seeing, or you can always book in coaching with me and we can rumble through those stories and actually help you find a really empowered narrative. So thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.